The Human Adventure. As a regular feature in its series of year-round broadcasts in the public interest, the Columbia Broadcasting System, in collaboration with the University of Chicago, presents the 37th dramatic chapter of The Human Adventure. The story of a city that became the master of a Midland Empire.
A city born from a national catastrophe.
The Civil War.
A portrait of a metropolis.
Another chapter in The Human Adventure. This series of broadcasts represents the work of universities. The Human Adventure presents to you the exclusive accounts of research in all fields of science and scholarship. A university's job is to learn the nature of things that you and all mankind may benefit from its knowledge. So that this knowledge may reach all America, this series is broadcast by the Columbia Broadcasting System in collaboration with the University of Chicago over Columbia's Coast to Coast Network.
Hello, America. Hello, Boston, Detroit, Washington, D.C., Minneapolis, and San Francisco. Tune in, Baltimore and Buffalo. Listen, South Bend and St. Louis, Cleveland, Kansas City, Pittsburgh and Portland, Milwaukee, Miami, Duluth and Des Moines, Albany, Albuquerque, Spokane, Santa Fe, Little Rock and Louisville, Chattanooga, Charleston. Listen, America. Your great cities grew against the sky because they were American. Because they built a brave new world in a world neither brave nor new. Tonight we're going to tell you a story of yourself by telling you about a town plumb between Atlantic sunup and Pacific sundown. A weaver of words named Sandberg once called it
hog butcher for the world. Toolmaker, stacker of wheat, player with railroads and the nation's freight handler. Stormy, husky, sprawling city of the big shoulders.
Chicago. Yes, we're going to tell you about Chicago. We're going to tell you about your town by telling you about Chicago. When you wonder how to drink a single dipper from it. When you go to buy apples, you bite into one from a barrel. And when you wonder about a nation, you take a sample city and wind it up and watch it run, take it apart and see how it ticks, measure it up and down and clean around.
Sociology is the study of people, and the sociologist's laboratory is wherever people live. A group of sociologists at the University of Chicago have made the city by the lake their laboratory to study life. Professor Charles Merriam says,
we have analyzed Chicago because almost any social experiment imaginable within the gamut of Western civilization can be found in that city.
Professor T.B. Smith,
perhaps more strikingly than any other American city, Chicago is a sociological laboratory in which we can study modern American city life on a vast but comprehensible scale.
Professor Louis Wirth,
we found, for instance, that Chicago isn't just one big city. It's really made up of 75 separate communities that merge into one another.
Professor Leonard White.
We found that each one of these 75 communities had a character all its own. And from what we learned, we put together a book of facts. We distilled the lives of 3.5 million people into a reservoir of facts.
Suppose we did not have these facts. Suppose we walked through the city's streets and talked to the city's people. Suppose we saw only from the eye outward, what would we, you and I, what would we see? Traveling northward along Lakeshore Drive, you would see, shoulder to shoulder, yet not too close, stiff skyscraper hotels peering over the lake through streamlined lorgnettes. Here one man's meat is another's income tax. Here is the creme de la creme, Chicago's Gold Coast.
I know, dear, but don't blame me. The party was entirely Helen's idea. In fact, I
haven't...
I
know that, but how the devil can I be a good time Charlie tonight with that ticker tape still running through my mind?
Now, John...
Please don't now, John, me, Linda. You know the tape this noon was a good 2 minutes behind quotations? It's that Allison crowd in New York that's trying to beat down the market.
John, please. You're home now, and if you'd just cool off and sit down and let Crane bring you a double scotch... There, that's better.
Linda. What would I do without
you? Oh, probably work 27 hours a day and starve to death.
You rang, madam?
Yes, Crane. Mr. Johnson wants a double shot.
But now let's look behind this picture. Let's look at the record the scholars have written.
The Gold Coast region is larger than Denver, Rochester, Seattle, or Birmingham, and is a good example of a city within a city.
The average Gold Coast inhabitant is 34 years old, and if married, has one child, and lives in a four-room apartment.
He pays an average rental from $100 to $1,000 a month, and...
If he owns a separate house, it's worth between $60,000 and $600,000.
Chicago, Sample City, USA. If we should paint the portrait of your city, or a reasonable facsimile thereof, we would see poverty and wealth. In Chicago, we would see the Gold Coast skyscrapers cast lengthy shadows that stretch backward across crooked rooftops like silent signs of condemnation. Life here wears a thousand masks of pain, and a tightened belt means having breakfast. Here is the slum.
6 people out of 1,000 have tuberculosis. 28 more have a social disease.
Yet, you'll see geraniums and tomato cans along the windowsills.
Residential area, stark and ugly, barren of trees and grass. Recreational facilities, mainly taverns and pool rooms.
In these pool rooms, the sons of those immigrants who sought freedom in America barter their votes each election day, selling their birthright for a mess of patronage.
35 out of 100 boys have been up before the juvenile court.
Okay, but it's your shot. No, I miss. Where am I?
They smoke, boast, and chalk of cue for want of better paying jobs to do. Here, laughter sits on street corners, gossiping with sorrow.
Oh, thank you. Hey, 5 cents is the money, too.
Hey, Tony.
Hello, Joe.
Hey, shut that thing on.
Yeah, why? What's the matter? You don't like my music?
That's fine, fine. Only Mrs. Vittorio lives in the flat right over your head, and a little Angelo died this morning from TB.
No. Madre de Dios, excuse me, I didn't know.
Why, Susie, I thought you'd gone out with that fine Mr. Kincaid.
Well, I'm here, so now you know I didn't. And a man dropping candy boxes around you like raindrops. More than a dozen times a day. And you treat him like dirt.
I'm not interested in Mr. Show-Off Kilgallen.
Cassie, the man's got a civil service job. Pay him $45 a week. As regular as rain.
So? Is it an old maid you wanted to be?
Crocheting doilies for the window all day?
Well, maybe I'd rather be that than marry that old pickle puss.
Ah, Kathy, let me warn you. It's a lonesome washing that has no man sure to.
Ah, those old country sayings don't mean me.
Come on, Black Boy. Shut that thing off.
Okay. 2:30. I ain't done nothing all winter but shut off this here alarm clock. Every morning at 2:30 and drag my weird bones back to that lunchroom.
Oh, what you gotten about now? At least you work in a place where there's food around.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Can't go on. Everything I got is gone. Stormy weather. just can't pull my poles up together.
The slum, where longing cuts the heart out of laughter. Here pity is a luxury, yet men practice it daily. Here is a picture of extremes, a vertical view, the top and bottom of a city. But horizontally, Chicago stretches 212.8 square miles, walled only by the upturned bowl of sky and the bubble-walled horizon. A city so big, only plane pilots see all of it, doesn't grow in a day, and so our sociologists ask,
why did the city grow where it did?
Why do 3 million people come to one place to live?
We turn to Professor Bessie Pierce, historian, for the answers she found in old maps and diaries.
By the time the grandsons of the old pioneers were old enough to vote, Chicago had sprawled along the lake like a lazy backwoods fisherman in tattered trousers in need of a haircut. Here, the great commercial highways from the east met the winding byways to the west, and so the city grew.
Boo was being held in 1859, and this coonskin cap civilization out here has been growing so fast it busts its britches every 6 months.
And my company is looking over this land with an eye to its real estate possibilities.
Hi, Henry.
Hi, Mike. Mike, meet Mr. Adams. He's from Boston.
Hiya, Mr. Adams. Have a drink.
Oh, no, thanks.
Oh, this ain't your Eastern whiskey. This burns all the way down. Well, Mr. Adams, how do you like this little burg of ours in this wonderful year of grace, 1859?
Frankly, gentlemen, it's crazy. I looked at a piece of property just Monday. That was for sale at $7,000. Now, I went back this morning and... Wow. I still can't believe it.
There was a two-story hotel on the land, and the price was $40,000, eh?
Exactly. Bill, you're the man for figures. Give Mr. Adams a slew of them facts.
Well, Mr. Adams, here's a town to invest your money. There's a whole tide of Irish and German immigrants pouring in here every day, account of the trouble and famine in Europe. There's so much good farmland, you can run a plow from Ohio to Nebraska without turning aside for a stone.
You said a mouthful that time, sure enough.
Yes, but...
Now, wait a minute. Hold your horses. I ain't through. All these new farmers need clothes and hardware, don't they? Chicago buys that from the east, sells it to the west. All these farmers want some place to sell their meat and grain, don't they? Chicago buys that from the west and sells it to the east.
But transportation facilities...
Transportation? Mike, that's your line. Tell him.
Mr. Adams, I've got a tow-headed boy born right around the corner from here. Now, when he was a baby, we had one railroad, two steamboat lines, and me. That boy is 16 now, and we've got 10 railroads, 12 steamboat lines, and two more like me.
America was growing, with land values skyrocketing like fever charts. Chicago had a convention in 1860, and afterward someone asked a lanky rail splitter,
how does it feel to be nominated for president, eh?
Well, I'm like the man they rode out of town on a rail. He said if it wasn't for the honor of it, he'd just as soon walk.
But within a year, the dynamite peg labeled slave question exploded with a bang that shook Chicago from buckskin boot to coonskin cap.
Fort Sumter, fired on by C-O-N, Confederate troops. Gosh.
Hey, Paul, we're going to go to war just as well.
All resources of the Union Army must be utilized. Since Chicago lies in a vast productive area, we shall establish a depot there for clothing, horses, hay, corn, wagons, camels, iron...
And Professor Pierce says...
The Civil War put Chicago on the map because Chicago had the men, the machines, and the market. And so Chicago became master of a Midland Empire.
Just how does a sociologist work? Without the mathematician's slide rule, without the chemist's test tube, the doctor's microscope, what tools, what intricate balance does he use to weigh these facts about that complex mass of walking contradictions which we in all fondness choose to call man. Take the town's rooming house district. Behind the walls of broad stone houses that once took grandeur by the hand and now hang out little cards, rooms for rent, behind these walls lives a population shifting with seasons, changeable as weather. What proportion of the city's people live here? Do they vote? How often do they move? What is their significance in big city life?
Harvey Zorbo, sociologist, to earn his degree of Ph.D., went into this district and rented a small office on a side street.
Your name, Zorbo?
Yes, that's right.
Now, the guy in the drugstore down at the corner told me you had a list of all the empty rooms in this neighborhood.
Yes, that's right. I'm sort of a renting agency. How much would you like to pay a week for your room?
Well, about $5.
Well, let's see what I've got in my file here. Ah, here's one over on 63rd Street. It's on the fifth floor. It has two windows. And you share the bathroom with three other tenants on the same floor.
Has it got a shower? That's what I always look for, a shower.
No, there's no shower.
Oh, no shower.
Let me see now. I'll look at another card. Yes, here's one with a shower. It has a window, and you sleep on a studio couch. Of course, this is on the second floor. It's noisy.
So it's noisy, but has it got a shower?
Yes, I'm positive. I checked on all this information myself.
Okay. And if I take the room, how much do I owe you?
Not a thing.
Now, cut it out, pal. What do you do, get a rake off from the landlady?
No, I'm just collecting a lot of information about this district so I can get an advanced college degree. The only way you have to pay me is to let me know whether you take the room and then let me know when you move out.
And for that, you've got to go to college?
Yes, that's right. I'm writing a book. I've got to analyze thousands of rentals, just like yours. I've got to show why people move in here and why they move out. That's why I'd like to come around a week or so and talk things over with you.
And you mean you got a college degree for writing a book like that?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, pal, then you pay me.
Harvey Zorbo ran his rental agency 2 years. 2 years research, shifting truth from tall stories until he could report...
The constant coming and going of its inhabitants is the most significant characteristic of this world of furnished rooms. The whole population, about 24,000, turns over every 4 months. In this area live, for the most part, young and unmarried men and women, most of whom do not bother to vote or cooperate in civic enterprises. This is a world of thwarted wishes and unsatisfied longings.
Let's look at another blueprint of the city the university sociologist has drawn, that of the suburbs. Says Professor Louis Wirth,
the heart of the city is like a whirlpool gradually emptying at the center, moving its population to the outer fringes of the city. Workers of the city express the common American desire to live out where they'd rather not work and commute into where they'd rather not live. As a result, the suburban cities have become parasitical dormitory cities. Their citizens work in and take their livelihood from the larger city. When financial difficulties beset the larger city, suburban dwellers form committees and demand retrenchment and economy with the spirit and outlook of alien landlords and non-resident taxpayers.
Here is the land where 7-Eleven refers only to commuters' trains caught on the run. Here lies the land of green grass and lawns where a man, a woman, a baby, and a budget can, theoretically speaking, live happily ever after amid modern utilities. Big city people in a small town way.
Gail, can you come up in the cellar a minute? The sink is stuck again.
Say, how can I raise the blades on the lawnmower if somebody's borrowed my screwdriver?
Bill, the sink's stuck again.
Maybe that's where my screwdriver is.
Now, please don't let a little thing like a lost screwdriver upset you.
Well, when I put a thing in its proper place, I like to be able to find it there when I come back.
Now, Bill, are you accusing
now,
me?
Now, did I say one...
Oh, my gosh. I bet Junior's taking another flop off that bicycle.
Don't give him too much sympathy now, or you'll make a sissy out of him.
Here are the people the professor mentioned. Men who make their living in the big town but like to live in little ones. Creating separate systems, courts, parkways, water supplies, and municipalities. Little beads of suburbs around the neck of the city. A snarl and tangle which circles 30 miles, like a ball of yarn the kitten's been at. And in the center of this ball of yarn, the loop. A block of city streets, which scarcely number 35, ringed round by tracks of steel. The elevated train, which, at this center of the tangle, makes a loop. The Loop. Main Street, multiplied by a million. Open pocketbooks, open doors, open charge accounts. Sidewalk crowds, faces flushed, hot with bundles and bargains. Hear the throbbing, pulsing push and fury of a city's heart. An autobiography written by bookkeepers, where magic carpets are woven with dollar bills.
The customer is always right was the slogan the first Marshall Field created almost two generations ago. Today we have one of the finest and biggest department stores in the world.
It's in the balcony only. Come into the Chicago, Belvin and Catch, Wonder Theater of the Windy City. Eat like Gable, who brilliantly in the
Ah, these two restaurants can always find room for two more. Table in the corner for two?
Oh, yes.
All right, all right. Who said no? Sure, it's a real diamond, but a pawnbroker tries to pay these North Clark Street rentals can't be a philanthropist. I'll offer you $30 for a
room. First stop, 20th floor. Wrigley Building Express elevator going up. Stand back, please, for one more passenger.
Here soar skeletal, skyscraping spikes of light, where by day deep questions are posed, decisions pondered. From offices where clouds drift by, come orders, memos, documents, and files that press the buttons, turn the wheels, pull switches, spin the shafts and steel mills, wigwag planes, load granaries, now grown so high the roofs are hinged to let the moon go by. Yes, Chicago has the men, the markets, and the money. And Chicago remains the master of a Midland empire.
Professor Louis Wirth says of our symbol,
Chicago is a symbol of American civilization, standing on the threshold of adapting our traditional institutions, born in the New England village, to the demands of modern urban life. The realization of man's intelligent guidance of his social destiny and the attainment of a better world for all mankind will make the reaching of the old physical frontier seem puny in comparison. Now that the old world is being reduced to ashes, the cities of the new world are confronted with the new responsibility of keeping the light of civilization burning.
Universities are places of research, storehouses of knowledge. They investigate the cause of disease that you may have better health. They study problems of economic production that you may have a more secure life. They analyze human experience in past times that you may comprehend the present and be better fitted to meet the future. The universities represent your investment in a better life. You are the beneficiaries in the human adventure.
Next week, the human adventure enters the operating room to witness the most difficult of all surgical feats. The story of Dr. Harvey Cushing and the triumphs of modern brain surgery. So that all Americans may keep abreast of contemporary university research, the human adventure is brought to you each week over Columbia. All characters in today's broadcast were portrayed by professional actors. Scripts for the human adventure are prepared and written by the University of Chicago, and the production is directed by the staff of the Columbia Broadcasting System.